Well, thanks to Caroline for saving the day, but big welcome to the D&K Repos Isthmian show. Of course, we're doing it a little bit different this time around by Zoom, which is really kind of Caroline to do that. But Keith, we'll ask you the same question I've asked you twice. I mean, what's the week been like for yourself?
Well, Dave, I've had about 12 pints since you last asked me, so and I've played four rounds of golf. Yeah, again, as I said, yeah, no, it's not been a bad week. Now golf's back. Obviously, no football. I've been looking at a lot of Twitter feeds about people playing football at the moment, and I know me and you have been talking. But as I said, the Christmas decorations up, so the family are happy, and now I can drink.
What about you, Dave? Had a good week?
Yeah, it's been all right. As I said before, I don't need Christmas decorations to have a drink. But well, I do. Maybe I'm talking about last year's Christmas decorations. I've had a drink since then. So that's all good. I'm back on the golf course. That's fine. And I've actually got to see a couple of games. I've been lucky enough to sneak in to Sutton and Wilston and Sutton and seen a 3-3, which was really good. So, yeah, and I've seen the boss. See, the thing about Caroline is you ain't seen her for a long time. But I'm a massive Northern Ireland supporter, and every game on Sky now, Kaz covers it.
Yeah.
So I'm fed up looking at her, to be honest.
So he's been turning off every other Thursday. You're not going to ask me, because I can tell you, David, what each of the others has been doing, because I've heard it three times now. I don't mean it. I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to be an international woman of mystery and not tell you what I've been up to.
I mean, with those two, I know you said it before and all that, but it's like working with these two must have been a nightmare. I mean, it's a nightmare when the two of them are on, you know, when they're on the show with me, to let alone with yourself. It must have been a nightmare for so long.
Oh, I loved it, because so rarely when I'm working do I get to do nothing, but these two, you just used to wind them up and let them go. So any subject whatsoever. But my favourite times were mainly when Steve Evans, and no one has ever said this before about it being your favourite time, but when Steve Evans used to be in non-league football, and I just thought, oh, I really want an easy week next week. So I'm just going to book Steve Evans and then just get him to talk to Dave. And the rows that used to ensue. And, you know, I thought it would be an easy week, but it wasn't, because the amount of stuff we'd probably have to cut out, couldn't repeat, had to apologise for, as these two would go head to head. But some of my favourite conversations and my most favourite times working in radio always came with the non-league show. That's not me getting emotional. It's just I've been working hard, so I've got a bit of a dry throat. But it always was. The stuff we got to do, we just... I don't know whether they forgot where we were, but they just literally turned the lights off in the rest of the building. And they were automatic lights, weren't they, boys? So yeah. You'd walk through the building and see these lights like you're on one of those runways, catwalk runways, which I know, Dave, you'd know a lot about. But the lights would just follow you around the building and the spotlight on the studio, and you'd be on your own. Everyone else had gone home, and it used to feel a little bit naughty. Like you could just talk about whatever you want and a conversation between friends. At least I hope that's how it came across, because that's certainly how it felt.
But these two guys, whenever you speak to these two guys about you in particular, they do put you on a massive pedestal, even though they might deny it. They do put you on a big pedestal.
Nice. It's because they're so short. Nice. And they'd like to stare at my toes rather than at my belly. So
we were abused here for 3 years, you know, absolutely abused, physically, mentally. You know.
I will tell you, Dave, that the coffee at the BBC is appalling.
Is that what you remember, Keith?
It was the cheapest. It was no, the Christmas drink was better, but the cheap coffee they had. No, of course we didn't. Going up in the lift was always fun when I met Dave in the bottom. We always decided we was going to go to the pub first.
Yeah, it was always a good part. That was like it was like sort of hiding from the teacher, you know. Have a couple of beers, have a bit of chewing gum and go in and stay away from Kaz as long as you
chewing gum was right. Chewing gum was right, because I always used to say, you're not going into the pub beforehand, are you, David?
No. I need to listen back to some of the shows, because I don't remember most of them.
Now he tells me.
I'm only joking. You know that. I mean, we joke. To be fair, David, it was, you know, and it was a great time and all. I loved it. I loved it because of who doesn't want to be on the radio. I loved it with Keith, who was sort of young manager coming in, and I wasn't. And and Kaz was always the boss, you know, and rightly so, you know, and poked us with a stick when we needed poked. But it was the easiest thing in the world to do. You know, I often say to my friends that we did a however many years on it. Never swore once, which is massive on my part. But it genuinely had, every week was a joy. It was, and sometimes we had to rush from our games. Like, you know, no matter how the game had gone, you'd be in the car straight into the BBC. And I never, ever once felt like it was a chore, I promise you.
I did. It was a chore. On the blooming phone, trying to work out where he was in London, whether he'd make it in time. Maybe once. I think probably once in all those years did you not make it. Maybe just once.
Coming back from Canvey or somewhere, yeah. And it was just like, I was in armed robbery mode and it didn't matter. I just couldn't. There was nothing I could do. I was stuck. But it was always a blast, wasn't it, Keith? But it was always good fun.
Yeah, it was great. I tell you what was so good, Dave, about it is that especially the first time I remember going into the show, is that, you know, you're nervous, etc. But Caroline just made you feel so comfortable, and she knows more about football than all of us put together. And you just sat there and she would just spit it, and you just look in her across and just go, well, whatever I'm going to say is going to be easy, because she'd tidy up for us. And then otherwise I'd look down to what Dave's writing down on his piece of paper, and it was pretty simple. But what would have made it good is if they would have had a proper camera in there and you could have seen, and people could have seen what we were doing.
Never. No,
that's not happening. That's taken away. You know, everybody has often said that, you know, I'd say to the boss, you know, me and you have got faces for radio, so this camera stuff doesn't sit easy with me, let me tell you, you know.
Just with that non-league show, though, were you ever that disappointed that it wasn't put sort of more a time when people were going to be able to hear it? Because it was always seemed to be on like a late time, and it got later and later and later. And it almost felt as if it was a case of, well, it's only non-league, we'll just push it to the back of whatever else is going on. I mean, that's what it felt as a listener. Did you guys feel that yourself? I mean, with what was going on, and you'd rather it been in more of a prime time slot?
I think there was... My favourite was always doing the live shows because of the interaction. And BBC London was great at making sure we went out on the internet before everyone was doing podcasts, and we went out across the country. However, probably our biggest audience came when we used to record it on a Saturday night, and it would go out early on a Sunday morning, because at that stage it was not only going out on 5 Live, it was going out on every local radio station around the country. And we all know that volunteers, the lifeblood of non-league football, are those that are listening locally. And you'll both know, David and Keith, when you do your show, you're getting views from around the country. But those views are from people that might well be up early on a Sunday morning, walking their dog, or might want to listen to the podcast a bit later. And that was the ability of podcasts then, that you could listen to it anytime. But definitely by far the best times were the ones we were doing live. I was talking to someone the other day, and you think of the number of clubs that have come through non-league and up into the Football League. And I was chatting to the Fleetwood chairman, and I said, you probably don't know that live on our non-league show, the reporter was locked into your stadium. Everyone had gone home. And he
turned around. It's an SOS, wasn't it?
Yeah, he turned around to open the door. Just before he came on air with us, and said, you never guess what, but I can't get out of the ground. Like, oh, don't be daft, you know, someone's got... No, he turned round, waited behind to speak to us. All the lights had gone out. Everyone had gone home. Yeah, and we had to do an SOS over the radio, didn't we?
To
let him out.
I always remember he was concerned. I just couldn't stop laughing. I just couldn't speak during the whole thing. I was at my head down, because it was true. It can only happen live on the radio. I mean, the one thing I would say before Kaz continues is, and she's a professional in the media, so just, I suppose, she has to be careful with him. I don't have to be careful. I think it's a disgrace that the BBC doesn't have a non-league show. I don't mean a non-league show with us three in it. I mean a non-league show, you know, God bless it, whether it be Steve Evans presenting it, there should be a non-league show on the BBC. And the fact that there isn't is an absolute disgrace, Dave, you know. But anyway, boss,
Ollie
off you go.
Well, no, Ollie does one on local radio. I think, you know, that should be a podcast. And he's done a sterling effort keeping everyone involved on Twitter during all that's been happening over the past few months and trying to keep people engaged. And that is great. But it's, like I say, you can listen to any station in the world now via BBC Sounds, the new app that's not so new. But you can, can't you? So people can interact. But they need to pump their weight behind it. When we were doing it, you know, I used to get you, Keith, Dave used to help write articles that went in every non-league club's programme. I know Tim's still writing for the non-league paper, and kudos to them for supporting the non-league show that you do and keep doing it. And it's, yeah, it's disappointing. But we were there first, right? We knew
yes.
from the beginning. But it's probably a good job. I mean, the original Musketeers, Dave Watters,
character Dave.
Oh well, I think he was still editor of the non-league paper when he started out, and I think in our time, during the course of the show, he left the non-league paper, started his own other non-league rival paper, then a magazine, went back to the non-league paper. I don't know if he got sacked or whatever happened. That's scandalous. I can't say that. So Dave and Willie Wordsworth.
Yeah, Willie. Yeah.
Brilliant. And there were always moments where we would end up bent double. I will stop talking in a minute because I'm not paid by the word, but there's just one other moment that always sticks with me. When we were doing our live shows, I got everyone in early and I said, particularly Dave, Mr. Anderson always knew, and Keith always knew that I was directing it to all of the group, but I just meant Dave Watters. So I was acting like it was a team sport, but there was only one person who I needed to take the information in, and it was Dave Watters. Dave's a brilliant journalist, right? But he would always push it just too far. And we were in touch with Maidenhead United during the week, and it's the oldest continuously used ground in the country, and we always did quite a lot with Maidenhead. And their big news was that a prince was going to be an ambassador and put some money in, and I can't remember where the prince was from. Let's say Denmark. And we were told we had to address him as Your Royal Highness and had to be ever so polite. So I sat them all down, like naughty schoolboys that they are, and told them how we had to address him, how we had to be polite. And on absolute pain of death, there was one thing we were not allowed to talk to him about. Absolute pain of death. So the show had gone swimmingly. The prince had picked up the phone. That was the best part. Your Royal Highness, I had asked a few questions. I think even you, Mr. Anderson, had bowed and scraped and asked something politely.
Royalty, you know me.
Yeah, at which point we knew Dave Watters had to ask a question. So I'm sitting on my hands facing the other direction. And Dave Anderson's doing what he's doing now. He went, "Oh, Your Royal Highness, sir." Ever supply it, thought it started well, this is perfect. I just wondered if you're aware of the entertainment venues around the ground. At which point I'm trying to reach for the fader. I'm going cut, cut, cut to Dave. And he's carrying on talking. And you hear His Royal Highness say, "Well, no, but I'm very much looking forward to what sort of establishments can I take in?" And he said, "Well, on one of the corners, there's a little club called the Honey Pot," which, at which point I tried to get some words out to apologise. Well, I didn't apologise. I just said, "Sadly, we can't spend any more time with you," and hung up on him. For those that don't know, I mean, don't Google the honeypot, especially if you're at work. But let's just say it's an establishment that His Royal Highness would not want to find himself at. And any time I'm feeling a little bit like work is too much, I think of that moment and think, "Oh, Watters," which is not what we used to call him.
But I have to tell you, it's at times like that you were thinking, "I'm so glad she's running this show," because I was under the table in hysterics because he didn't know. And even when you were, you know, I'm not being funny, when you're doing radio, if you make a face at someone, you don't need to do much more. You just need to look at them in a certain way to make them react and think, to at least think. You could stand on your head when water started. He didn't see you. You give it all that, you know, "No, no." But he's like, "Oh." But he was a I love them, the bits.
I mean, you said that. I do remember on one of our shows that we were doing it from Harlow's ground and underneath the stand there, and we were talking at the time to a really lovely gentleman who's now passed away, but the chairman at the time of Crawley Down Gatwick, Brian Sucklin, who then went on to be at Peacehaven and Telscombe, and he said to me, he said, "Oh, Dave," he said, "just to let you know," he said, "I'm on the burger bar tonight." He said, "So." You know, just so you know, he's an under-18s game. And we're talking to him, and I think Keith remembers. I'm sure Keith was with me at the time. And we were talking to him, and he said, "Hang on a minute, mate." And suddenly his line sort of goes dead. And all you can hear is some guy, and he said, "Can I have like a burger, cheeseburger, two hot dogs, chips, hot chocolate?" And he's just sitting there crying with laughter in the background. And then I think one of the first shows we did, the actual first show I ever did, which was... Inside a shop when we first started doing the show on Hawks Radio. We did it in like a shop that was a recording studio. And we was doing it on internet radio at the time. And the first actual guest we ever had was Dave Waters. It was actually the first guest that ever came on the show. It was actually because he was to do with the league at the time. So he came on and was sort of like chaperoning Nick Robinson just to make sure that he didn't say anything that he shouldn't. So,
Should have been the other way.
He done something Crimson Casuals, didn't he, Dave, as well?
I think so.
Was it Crimson Casuals you done a bit of, Dave?
Yeah, because I think on the same show we had a Harlow player on, and he said to me, his name escapes me in a minute, but the right back at Harlow, and he turned around to me and he said, "Is there anything I'm not allowed to do?" I said, "You can't swear." I said, because I don't know how many people are listening. I said, "You cannot swear." And all of a sudden, somebody texted in and asked him a question. And of course, it was a cryptic question that I had no idea, you know, what the answer was going to be. So I've asked him this question, and he's just let go with the F-bomb live on the radio. Like, do you know what I mean? It was just like, as you said, Caroline, trying to get to that fader, and just couldn't get to the fader quick enough. And he just looked at me and as if to say, "Well, what did I say?" You know, nightmare.
Proper character. I used to call him the Mad Marcher, because if we were recording at 8 o'clock, he'd come in the door at 28 seconds with cigarette hanging.
Yeah.
You know, the hair all over the place, you know. I thought he made me feel organised. That's why I used to like him. I used to see him. He used to come in like a bat out of hell, wouldn't he? You know, but and then had no idea what we were doing on the show.
But still managed to ask the right questions.
Oh no, he was. He had that in it. You know, he had that, and was great company. I have to say, you know, great company in the studio, in the bar. You know, no matter where you are, like his life was chaos, and I loved being around him. You know.
So, I mean, on our show, and I don't know if Keith agrees, I mean, one of my all-time favourite people to have on at any time, because he's so, you know, present company excluded, of course, but, you know, somebody that comes on and so gracious every time he comes on and speaks to us is Tony Gow at Wharton Casuals. But, I mean, for yourselves, who was the best person that you ever had on like that to come on yours?
That's a good question, huh? I used to enjoy the different managers, Dave. Not because Danny and Nicky Cowley went on to do great things, but I always found them interesting. People who could string a sentence together. People who I didn't always see eye to eye with, you know.
Sorry. What? Your prerequisite is people that can string a sentence together. I don't mind what they say. They can string a sentence
just
together.
Just make sure
fine.
You get a full stop on the end of it, you know.
Right, that's the only reason I booked them.
Like, and people, like, I remember coming in after playing, I think I was managing Harrow and Gary McCann was managing Hendon. And we actually came, so we played against each other and we had to travel in, and I'd won, I always remember that. I was sitting in the back of his cab, like, big cheesy grin. And Mackers agreed to come in and do the show. Now, lesser people would have binned it. Lesser people would have said, "I can't go," but not only did he come, he drove me in his cab, and we did his show. And I'll never, so you and you get to meet managers. Very, very fortunate place to be, because you get to meet managers and you get to talk to them. And I did take him for a pint before the game if we could, and it was only a pint. You know, I know we joke and all that, because we didn't have time to have more. But sort of settled them down. And when we were in the studio, I always felt. I felt I learned an awful lot, as well as asking questions and trying to be entertaining for the show. As a football manager, to be around lots of different managers was brilliant, you know, and then leave them to the boss, and she would sort of question them and get the spotlight on them, and it was fine.
I think there's so much to be said of, and that was all our starting point every week was, will this story affect the rest of non-league football? So it didn't matter what league it was from, which club it was, however great down the pyramid it was, does this resonate with someone else? And I think that was the joy of Keith and of Dave, is both were managers living, breathing it. And if you're a manager, yeah, they might be in a fancier stadium than you, but they knew the heartache of what you've been through to win, to lose. And more on that, were just good stories. And there's a great sense of achievement in when we would tackle something that would resonate, to be there from the start for AFC Wimbledon, to be there when Thamesmead were going through all their troubles and everything that you went through, Keith. You know, there was some wonderful moments when Keith was dressed up as the mascot. What was the mascot at Thamesmead? You used to dress
Tommy
up
the mascot. Tommy the Thamesmead Toad, wasn't it?
That's it, the Toad. And
I entered him in the Grand National, didn't I?
You did.
We got sent to Sprints. He met the Queen at Ascot.
And how did you meet the Queen, young man? Well, I was dressed as a toad.
Yeah.
Exactly what happened. But you knew, and you know how to not just talk to managers, but to talk to people. And I think that was key. But it was always those unexpected moments that when you two and the managers and the other guests we would have on would just ask a question, that just got right to it, because the other manager that was on felt it too, or the fans that were on felt it too. And that I think was always the key for me. Apart from one, I don't even remember the guy, Dave. We phoned up, I think his team got through in the FA Vars, and we were very fortunate when we started to move up to Manchester that we had people that phoned guests for us and booked guests. Do you remember? They produced the show.
So
whatever had happened in whoever was producing that week, and they put them through, and the guy went hello, and said, "Oh, is that, you know, Bob Jones?" "Yes." It wasn't, his name wasn't Bob Jones, in case Bob Jones is listening. Yes, Bob Jones. And then we were chatting, asked him a couple of questions, and you heard him hold the phone away and talk, I assume it was his wife, and went, "Well, I don't know who she is or what I'm talking to." We'd had a good 5-minute conversation with this guy who did not have, did he? Did he squat who we were?
Did have a clue. So. And there was another guy from up north who was a real character. His name's left me, but it was a real...
Simon?
No, it was a guy who was either a chairman or a supporter of a lower club, and he had a real accent, and he was a real sort of centric character, millions of programmes, and see, this is me and names. That's why I've got my own tattooed on my arm, because I can never remember names. And I just remember the whole thing is, he was eccentric, he had a great accent, he was very funny, and his passion. And we got them all the time. You know, we got people who came on and talked. You know, it's easy to, I always find it's, when I speak to people who support the big teams, the Liverpools, the Man United, the da-da-da-da, it's easy to come on and talk about your team because everybody knows them. But these people used to talk about their team with, like, that was their Man United, you know, that's what got me, that was their Liverpool. They worshipped the players, you know, it wasn't, you know, they were in awe of them, you know, when they spoke about them. And I loved that. I loved that sort of, and I always say to everybody, and I'll say it until I die, is that you've got to, especially now the way things are, you've got to go to non-league. You've got to go pay a tenner in or whatever it is. Obviously, I don't pay in. That goes without saying. No, but pay in, go and have a pint, go and watch proper football, you know, go and speak to proper supporters. You'll never turn back. You'll never, ever change. The other thing I will say about Kaz, and I always, you could never, I tried hard over the years, I don't even know if I've told this, but any time Chelmsford came up, she would always be Mrs. Professional, you know, they're doing good, doing bad, she didn't like this one, oh, he's not for me, or da-da-da. Any time we went live, professional. And I would always try and get something out of her, you know, get her to trip up or to say, well, I don't like him, or, oh, he's great, oh, I love him, and, oh, his legs, oh, da-da-da. Not once. Not once. I think it's the only reason I stayed on the show for so long was to try and trip her up over Chelmsford, because she's very, very passionate about it. Isn't she, Keith? I never, ever...
Oh, 100%. 100%. Her love for Chelmsford is massive. See her family as well. So have you been along there recently, Caroline?
This weekend is the first time we can go back. So we're playing Bath City on Saturday. And we've had a bit of a stinking run of late. Mm-hmm. So to get the fans back in. But there's only just over 800 going to be allowed back in, and season tickets first. And so it's just... I'm trying to judge it. My dad is desperate to go back, and we've been watching. This is what has been a real joy. I don't know if you've all found this. Being able to watch clubs and what non-league clubs have done quality-wise, live streaming games, has been phenomenal.
Yeah.
As was a little bit unfortunate to start with, because the chairman and the supporters invested in this brilliant swoofy camera system that does it automatically. And the very first game... So it tracks the ball around the pitch.
Yeah.
The very first game, the assistant manager of who we were playing was bald.
I think I've heard this story.
Go on, I haven't.
This is brilliant.
Every time he walked in front of the dugout, you just saw the top of his head. So the camera immediately panned and zoomed on his head. So,
thought he was the ball.
Oh, yeah. Twice we had penalties. Mm. And... It loved bald heads and white gloves, and our keeper had white gloves. So Lee Walgan, brilliant keeper for Chelmsford. Mm-hmm. We had a penalty up the other end. He'd run over to our dugout to get a drink of water or something. So just as the guy was about to kick the penalty, vroom, back over to the keeper's gloves as he's running over for his drink. But it managed to pan back. But they've got a little joystick now, and you know the professional setups. Yeah. I don't know if you've seen Welling, what they've been doing, but all these clubs up and down the country, amazing, like proper TV output, interviews beforehand live. Some of them have got multi cameras down, most just one camera. Yeah. But the ability for anyone sat at home to pay a little bit of money to their club to watch their game it's been amazing. And that's been emotional, actually, watching what people have done to keep their clubs going.
With my club, it's the case, because I do the camera stuff there, and it's like, but they won't stream it out. You know, it's only to a chosen few. So it's like that. That's the real disappointing thing, because you know we've done it, I think, on a friendly before an hour, and we got like over a couple of thousand people watching it. Do you know what I mean? But when you want to sort of do it on a regular basis, it's that, you know, we get told no, can't do it.
Yeah, I think that's the case for your one though, Dave, because you can still have you still had spectators paying. And I think they were more worried that you might not get people through the door more than actually to stream. But I agree. And we were saying this the other day. I think what non-league clubs have done, even going down to step six, all the way up through this COVID, is unbelievable. And Caroline, you must have been here, but we had Nick Robertson from our league actually on. And he was saying, you know, we were sort of saying, well, how many people do you think have come and watched Eastman games over the before lockdown? And, you know, we said between 20 and 30,000 that, you know, no cases have been reported. And he said everyone's on the waiting for the DCMS to sort of give the green light. And he said it would be nice for one person from the DCMS to come and watch a non-league game and see what these clubs from step one all the way down to step six have actually done. And they don't seem to really be that bothered, and that's the only thing that gets me a little bit.
They're trying to. It's about mitigating risk, isn't it, Keith? And I guess what they can control. It's not right. It's not right at all. Particularly when you see, and we all know the arguments when you see fans going in to watch football in a cinema. Then why aren't they in the open air? Yeah. And the amount of work that's gone to basic things like online ticketing systems, which clubs have had to set up. To get the QR codes, to make sure they've got records of everyone. And these are all volunteers. These are all people doing it in their own time. And I know we're used to that, right? But these, you kind of feel like these communities are being forgotten. And it is wrong. And it's just, it's just unfortunate that it only takes those that have a loud enough voice to be listened to when the bedrock of football and of many of our communities is what all the volunteers are doing, is what you're doing managing these teams, and that's what they'll miss when it's gone, and you can't get it back. You can't get it back.
Do you think, obviously, doing the non-league show and everything, do you think the gap's getting bigger between the FA with what now put in brackets the elite football, and compared to looking at steps three now? I've seemed to find they sort of have pushed us aside a little bit and now are only concentrating on the National League, North and South, and National League, and the rest isn't really that worried about.
Come on,
guys. Well, no, it's funny that in pre-pandemic, I think the National, North and South felt like it was a bit of a forgotten level of football. And even the Ishmael Southern Northern Prem as well, in so much as it was seen as an area where clubs had a bit of money, could pay players, and so wasn't grassroots, so didn't fall under that bracket, but wasn't professional. So I felt in that instance, they felt forgotten. What's happened is there are some vocal, important, or seemingly important, people with loud voices at that level. And that whole vote to be deemed as a semi-professional and professional to get the playoffs to happen then sort of backfired on them, but left them in this situation where, I mean, I left the National League sort of March, April time. And at that stage, they were in a situation where they couldn't call upon anyone for any money and didn't know what they were going to do. And they did have these huge packets of to go out the door to try and somehow keep paying these players. And that's what was looked at. But we've seen that happen across. We've seen self-employed people be part of the forgotten area of the workforce. And it's kind of if someone's not easy to put under a tax bracket, then they get forgotten. And I think that happens the further down you go. I don't know how you all feel about the suspension or the continued suspension of leagues at your level and the damage that might do, whether pausing is the right thing. Got to get the go-ahead to June and to be able to extend the leagues. But I just, is mothballing the right thing?
Go on, Dave.
No, I think, and funny enough, I spoke to Kevin McLaren tonight. I haven't spoken for a while. He's a Chertsey manager. And I was just saying, it's a terrible time to be a football manager, to be a football player, to be a football, I'm talking about non-league, a non-league supporter. You know, it's just, you know, we're dealing, and don't get me wrong, I think that what the pandemic's a whole big thing. Take that out of the picture, because we know everybody's suffering with that, and I don't want to make light of that. But if we're talking about what we are in non-league, it's a terrible time. You know, it's a time when, as a football manager, you know, if I'm 120 years old, which I am, and I've done a million games, and a young manager rings me up and goes, "How would you deal with this, Dave?" And he might phone someone else up and go, "Keith, how would you deal with that?" And then he's an idea of where he wants to go with it. No one's an idea where they need to go with this. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to plan for it. They don't know what they're planning for, because it, you know, take your eyes off the ball, it's changed the game. So to keep your group of players together, keep them fit, keep them focused, keep them from that fragmenting as a unit is, listen, I think of every answer to everything and a big mouth to go with, but it's a difficult, difficult time. And you can't even offer advice. Everybody will do it their own way. So that's part one. Part two is, you know, I'm used to going to my board and going, "Listen, he's a good player. I want to give him that amount." Now, where do they get that from? What do we do now? Do we not pay them? Does that mean they can go and do what they want to do? No one at our level can be paid every week because we're not doing anything. And it's just problem after problem after problem. And I'm not saying that anyone should have the solution. Everybody will criticize governments and, you know, opposition parties. I'm not into that. I think this is a position that the world's never seen. But I just hope and pray that as we come out of it and as we get the vaccine and get ourselves going again, that the powers that be don't forget us and don't forget the people at all levels of non-league down to grassroots. Because if one part of that's missed out, it'll never recover. You know, if one club disappears because of this, I think we're all guilty. If one club disappears because of COVID, I think we all should shelter or take on the responsibility. And I mean us and everybody else in it all the way to the top. We've a real responsibility to each other. And then once we get that sorted out, we can go and kick each other's backsides again, because that's what the game's about. But I do think it's a real period. I'm nearly glad I'm out of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I've sort of found, Dave, I agree with you. I've spoke to a lot of managers and over the course of the last few months that me and Dave's even had the show. But what this has done at the moment, for me, it's sort of brought a lot of clubs bickering between themselves, because the votes are going, well, I think we should all be playing football. And then people are in tier three going, well, we're not going to play behind closed doors. And then people in some in tier two are going, well, I spent this amount of money. The one thing that I think the separation's done is that it obviously the Northern and the Southern League and the Eastern League have all basically had to come together and now are saying we are one voice. Yeah. Because to try and make themselves heard, I would think, at the FA and whatever. But people, just say teams just in the Eastman League, managers and supporters don't know that. So they're going, well, hold on a minute. You know, why are we voting to pause football, where they don't maybe know that there's 60 teams in the Northern Division that are in Tier 3 that can't play football, even though there's only 14 in the Eastman League. So that isn't very sort of, that hasn't been sort of, I'd say, put out more in the publicised more, because the FA have just let everyone get on with it. Nothing's come down from the top people, and for me, and I know they've got a lot on their plate, and I criticise the FA more than loads, and I said to Dave, I think my application of being the new chairman went out the window ages ago. But you know, at least they had hear something from myself, is that they should be saying this is what's happening. So the three leagues don't have to sort of try and come together, because there is going to be a time with this pandemic, and it is a one-off, where the South's going to be better than the North or the West or the, but they can't do it. And it is causing, and you see it on social media, it's causing a lot of teams to fall out at the moment. I've been seeing, like, Hastings are very, very vocal at the moment with their chairman, obviously, and a couple of other clubs, because they spent a lot of money, and rightly so in one way. There is no right or wrong, as you said, to say, right, we should be playing football, we shouldn't. You know, people's health and safety is down to each other. But when there's no directive from the people right at the top, nobody knows what's going on. And this is what's going to split. My worry is, when we do get back to a norm, there's going to be a lot of bitter taste between some clubs because of this. And it's not right.
So, guys, do you think, with this, the lockdown for the Eastern and the South and the North teams, it just seems a bit weird, because it was, I think what Carol and I were saying earlier on, it was sort of like the National League and the National South, National North couldn't play, but we could play. And now it seems to have turned around completely. I think where some people, and we had the Deira manager on last week, and he came back where I think me and Keith were completely surprised at some of his answers that he was coming back with some of the questions. But mm-hmm. I can see why some of them are getting angry, because you've got sort of steps 5 and 6 playing, you've got steps 2 and 1 playing, but 3 and 4 in the middle can't. And you can see why people may be getting a little bit angry because of that.
This is where we wait for Dave to say something pithy. Hang on, he's taking a run up.
The one team will want you to answer first.
Uh-huh. All right then, I'll go first.
Thank go you, on in.
Answer. I'll give away a little trade secret. I left the National League because work was just too much, and I couldn't dedicate enough time to helping with the board. But one of my big frustrations, I'd contacted a lot of the leagues, not South National, but down Isthmian and Southern, and just had a word with all of them. I'd talked to the supporters groups, I'd spoken to the FSA, and wanted to get together a collective, right? So just representatives, we could have all met on Zoom like we're doing now, and just had a collective about how we firefight and where we go from here. What does day one look like? The minute that the government said we're out of lockdown, and I mean lockdown one, what would day one look like for non-league football? And there just wasn't an appetite at the time within at national league level. I don't know. I think there was a fear that it would in some way undermine the work that was being done by some of the boards across non-league football. And I don't think it was ever that. I think we needed managers on it. We needed fans on it. We needed secretaries. We needed the league representatives. And we needed supporters. And we needed, within non-league football, think how many people that have marketing heads, have the commercial now. So that if we were all pulling together and as a collective could have got stuff done. And that's my biggest regret, that I didn't force it. I didn't force it to happen before I left, because I'm not saying we'd be in a much better position now, but at least we probably will be talking a lot sooner than we have. And it's great to see what Mark Harris, Nick, and everyone's doing in pulling together the whole leagues below the National League. And it should have been like that from the start. But then, Dave, we were banging on way back in the days of Dean Holdsworth, who's not everyone's favourite, but when he started the Non-League Footballers Association. That's what that was all about, wasn't it?
Well, that was started by me and him talking outside the studio one night when we were talking about injuries, and it sort of came out of that. Do you remember we came in and then we spent a long time sort of discussing it, and it became something that, but rather than nothing, but it didn't become what I wanted it to become, and I sort of didn't bother with it. But good luck to them with it. But I agree with you. I think that the big question, Dave, is that we have to do this as one, because if the top two play and the bottom three play, doesn't matter because you need the middle. Otherwise, you know, one league affects another. So there has to be promotion and relegation out of it. Otherwise, what's the point? You know, what's the point in you know, the national and the north and south plan, and then, you know, the Raymond and da 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 da, whoever, not playing, and then the combined counties plan? Because the bottom line is everyone has to play. Everyone has to complete a season for it all to work. So if one league doesn't play, everything's knackered. So I think it's essential that we all either do it or we all either don't do it, because otherwise it doesn't work. Now, what Kaz is saying is, you know, it's magnificent. It's not rocket science, but it should have happened. And I just worry at times like this, you know, it's easy to say that leagues are fearful, and I understand that. But league boards need to, you know, sometimes they get stuck up their backsides, for want of a better description, their own backsides. And it's a time not to shut the door to talk about what you're doing. It's a time to open the door and invite everybody in to tell them what you think we should be doing. And it's a time for us all to do it together so that we can finish a season. You know, and you know, you said to me when we were trying to go earlier on, you know, I still hold the vase, and don't get me wrong, I'll joke about it and I'll laugh about it, and it's magnificent for me. But I feel so sorry for the people who should have the right to win at this. Well, we're now, I seen the draw today for round three. Last year's hasn't been won. So it's a mess. And as much as it's difficult, and we're in a situation, as I said before, that no one else has been in, we all need to do this together. It needs to be one way. Not everybody's going to agree on the one way, but there has to be communication, massive communication between people. And we should be driven with, let's get the season finished so that relegations and promotions can take place, and please to the football gods that we all can move forward and into normality next season.
Okay.
No, I agree, and I said it last week on the show, Dave. I was a little bit taken aback at sort of, and I said that some people just have their own mentality of, you know, sod it, if I'm all right, Jack, don't worry about the rest. And this is what I was trying to say before we went off, is that I think it is splitting a lot of sides and a lot of people because of it. We either all got to be in it together as one, hence why I said about the North and Seven League and everything else, but it just doesn't seem to be going that way. And I listened to just what Caroline said, and it would have been great if someone would have done that. But you would want someone at the top to be doing it from the FA and not just leaving us about. And this is why I am more outspoken and said, look, you know, get off your backside and do something, because it's not. There are going to be clubs that are going to go to the wall because of it. Because you know, it's so easy. People going, look in hindsight, you sort of knew the season was always going to have a break because of the pandemic. Why are you spending all this money? But that's not what it should be about. My only downside to it, like I said, I do feel sorry for a lot of leagues. Because they are sort of, they're damned if they do, they're damned if they don't. And we've said this, and we've tried to put them all together. But I think they've just been left by the FA just to get on with it. And then they go, well, you make a decision. It's a little bit like this statement that was put out last week, where everyone was saying that they were crucifying the Eastern League. And obviously the Northern and the Southern might have been doing the same, going, what sort of statement's that? Is that, well, we're putting it to a vote. We'll let you know tomorrow. But they didn't actually come out and say, well, we had to get it ratified by the FA. Why haven't the FA come out and gone, right, all three leagues have had this meeting. Everyone's had a vote. This is the decision. And that's the problem I think non-league football's had, is that the FA don't seem to sort of care. As long as the top end's fine, they'll sort the bottom end out later. And that's what gets me.
Sorry, Cuz. Are we right in saying that the FA have the authority to say, look, we've listened to y'all, here's what we're doing?
They do, but it's within the league structure. So the rules are written within the league. And there's the rub, actually, Dave, because there's the National Game Board. So there are representatives of all our levels sit on that. But they are representatives chosen by clubs to represent you at board level as a league, and then their representative then sits on the league, and the vote share that goes between that. I can't exactly remember the split. There's a vote share split on who votes on what, but they're still people that are making decisions at the tops of leagues. And my point was, you need voices and thought from outside of that. Those that are working in business, that are volunteering, that are holding these clubs up, and you need that consensus from out of there. The big problem though, Dave, the minute the Premier League restarted, then the EFL was going to restart. Now the EFL have got it within their constitution. If you go through their rules, regulations, where's Colin Peake when we need him? He'd know exactly what number it was.
Absolutely, yeah.
But there's a wording in there, something along the lines of that they reserve the right to pick the team for promotion. So if the national, I can't remember the exact, so don't hold me to it. If the National League can't provide a team or two teams, then they could have, for example, chosen, right, I think Notts County are the biggest, I'm not saying they would have gone for that, but who's the biggest team with the most attendance? We'll pick them to come up into the national, into the League Two. Or you know what, we might not relegate whoever. So the minute the first league starts, so at the top being the Premier League, and the EFL had to start, because the EFL would have been scuppered too. Imagine if the Championship hadn't finished and then hadn't provided, by whatever means, playoffs, points per game, teams to go up into the Premier League. Then the Premier League could have said, right, no relegation. Suddenly the Premier League becomes an entity on its own. So the pyramid is the pyramid is the pyramid. So if you're right, if you start one point, you've got
to finish it.
The rest.
Yeah.
And that's promotion and relegation. You know, we'll all remember there were conversations had, I don't mean at National League, but we saw them in the press about, or do we get playoffs for those that might be relegated? Do we play off between teams that finish the top on points per game of the league with those that finish bottom in the league above? You have to create fluidity. Sorry for me to say, if I had more you have to create that through the pyramid system. And if you get one blockage at any point, then it all goes kaput. So you're right. We either need to finish this season by any means possible and start afresh from next season. So it might be we have to go points per game. Might be we have to scrub it off entirely. But look at what happened to Tranmere. Look at clubs throughout.
Yeah.
It has to be a consensus. Everyone voted on it, and that's where it's fair in that respect. But no one's going to be happy every way through. But we have to maintain the pyramid structure. So if one's going, the rest of them got to go too.
And I think as well that people need to understand that. And it's, again, as I say to people, it's easy on this end of the phone to make your mind up and say what you think, because effectively, I'm going to go and have a cup of tea and a curry in a minute. Yeah. Whereas people are worried about the future of their football clubs. But we have to finish the season, whether everybody plays once well, you know, whatever way they come about it, they need to do it. Other ways, I don't know what is the answer to it. Then
that's the only thing
it could fragment.
Dave, that's the only thing that gets me, and we spoke about this before when we leave, but all this should have been put in place before we kicked the first ball of the season. Mm. Because, I'm no scientist, but I knew there was going to be another spike. And if what we're led to believe now, there could even be another lockdown in January. So where does that put us? And all you're doing is opening up cans of worms. Because I spoke to a manager the other day, and I said, well, would you go for only play each other once? He went, nope. He went, because I could have played the top five sides away from home already. And because it wasn't put in black and white. And over that lockdown, there wasn't enough time to sort this out. I believe that, I know that clubs have gone around in non-league now at our step that have been given a survey, how would they like it finished, if it was points per game, what percentage, which by all accounts, a lot of people are saying 75%. But if that's the case, that I can't see that happening.
No.
So then we're right back to where we were at the beginning.
Yeah. So it's easy, and don't get me wrong, and as much as you come on here and you give honest opinions and from our hearts, because that's who we are, it's very easy to sit on here and to say what should and shouldn't happen. Effectively, it's a very, very difficult situation that they're all in. But I agree with Kaz, you have to start somewhere, and that's where it should be started, and it should be started as quick as you can. And if it, if it gets to the stage where it's too late, get it started anyway. Let's get something going where people throughout non-league know exactly where they stand, because you become disillusioned because you've no idea what's going on. It's an absolute mess, And again, I hope
that's it. No, Dave, isn't it? Sorry to talk all over you. I'm trying to get out the door. Communication is everything. But that's the same, isn't it? If you're a manager at the club, you want the chairman to communicate that you have the smallest budget in the league and that you're doing brilliantly and above where you should be and that your job is safe, right? If you're the chairman, you want to be communicating direct to the fans saying there's nothing to worry about. This is what, in any given season, communication is everything. And I know they're firefighting. I know there's so much going on, but it doesn't hurt to hear from these people. We don't hear enough from the people that are making these decisions.
Even the point, guys, of them coming on saying, "Look, we don't know yet, but we're gonna try our best, and we'll let you know." At least hold your hands up. We haven't got a clue. If anybody's got a good idea, let us know. I'd rather have that as nothing.
Yeah,
Caroline, did you think it was a good idea that they let clubs vote on this? Because obviously the tier thing has made a massive issue, hasn't it? Especially in tier three. Like I said, I live in Kent, so where you're not, you can't have spectators in. Did you think that was a good idea that they let clubs vote? Or do you think, Dave, as well, that they should have just said, look, no, that's what we're doing, get on with it?
I think you're damned either way, aren't you? Really? Because if they hadn't given clubs a vote, then the clubs would have said that we're not being listened to. And ultimately, the board members are voted by the clubs and put in that position, aren't they? And vice versa. So people need to take a step back and think of fairness the whole way along. And it's only going to work if everyone's going along together. And that means, it's like I said to someone right at the start of it, it's like when I go cycling with my brothers, they always put the fastest one right at the back alongside me so that I'm not left behind. You have to go with the slowest, you have to go with the weakest, and you have to make sure that everyone comes along with you. And it's the only way. Society, football, everything, it's the only way as a community that we will get through things is you're only as strong as your weakest member. And so there has to be a collective thought through process. And you just got to hope that's what's happening. And I reiterate right back to the start of this, which is brilliant. All your leagues are talking to one another.
Yeah.
They are. And right from our days in Manchester, Mark Harris was always saying that, wasn't he? We should all be joining together, from the sponsorship to whatever's happening, the strength and unity in everyone being together, which it should be.
And I think and I'll have to go in a minute, which I'm sure you'll be delighted, but when you look at what the clubs have done, when Kaz was talking earlier about the streaming, I've watched a few games, and how they've sort of implemented stuff out of nowhere, you sort of think they've stood up, that part of the football club has stood up, Now it's up to the people above them to stand up, you know, and do their bit. Because I have spent more money on streaming than I've spent going to football matches in 2 years, because it's worth paying the money.
Yeah.
And you do see the game. And as you say, they've done that on their feet. They've sort of hit the ground running and done it. So it's now time for the people above them to be brave and to get together and bang down doors and do something they've never done before. Listen to other people.
And my last point before we all go, you're right, Dave. And I applaud all that these clubs are doing. Mm. The chairman, our chairman at Chelmsford City, it's not his job. You might argue, why do you get involved in a football club? But it's not. But he is putting everything in to try and make it work, and appearing on the TV show himself when they do it. You know, it's people. The volunteers are, you're right, are putting in their part. The clubs, people in the clubs are doing their part. It's up to everyone else now to show up and support them.
And on that note,
Listen, guys, I appreciate all of you coming on tonight. I've really enjoyed it tonight. It's been fantastic, and especially having, as I say, you, Dave, on there, and Keith, and of course the Queen as well. Having you on as well has been absolutely fantastic.
The Queen.
It's been an absolute highlight.
Caroline, I have got to cut over Dave quickly. He has been badgering me for years. Please, can you get Caroline on, please? Because you're a big inspiration for him, from where you obviously come from to where you are now, and obviously all what you've done in non-league football. But Dave puts a great show together, and I know Dave, you've been on it a lot as well. But
yeah,
he was so nervous today as well, as you mostly see his tweets, which I don't know why, because you're the easiest person to speak to. So, but he's definitely looking to follow in your footsteps.
Oh, you don't need to follow my footsteps. They're not worth following, or you'll get lost. You're plowing your own furrow and every other cliche besides, Dave. And what you all do is brilliant, And very much like non-league football, we're only strong as the sum of our parts, right? And yeah, you're a brilliant leader. So keep doing what you're doing, and you make it enjoyable, informative. And that, as always, was the role of the BBC, to educate, to inform, to entertain.
There's that voice,
and show my videos.
Yeah, well, no, not the X-rated ones, Keith.
But listen, Carl, it's fantastic to have you on, and hopefully, you've got a spare Monday evening again in the future, you come back on and have a chat with us again.
Well, I tell you what, I'll do it from the mighty Melbourne Park, Monday night under the lights, watching Chelmsford. We can but dream that we'll be back there doing it. I will. It's Saturday. The mighty Bath City. So yes, I can't wait. Thank you for having me on.
We played, no worries. We played Bath City at Harlow Town once, and from where they are now to where we are now, as such, and we managed to beat them in the FA Trophy. So all the best, because it was.
We'll need it.
They weren't the nicest. Let's put it this way: they weren't the nicest of people. So yeah, all the best to Chelmsford. But massive thank you to everyone tonight. And me and Keith will be back the same next week. And of course, next week, we're trying to get owners to come on and join us next week to let us know how the COVID has affected you. So if there's any owners out there of football clubs that want to come and join me and Keith next week on the show, then please get in contact with us through our Twitter feeds and through our Facebook feeds. And we'll get you on the show next week to talk to us about how COVID has affected your club. But until then, a massive thank you to Caroline, to Keith, and to Dave. And we'll let him go and have his curry. And from all of us, good night.